Hi, I'm Mike Nagrit, and you're listening to Chicago Magazine Chefs on the Grill.
Four, three, two. One more
time. Hi, welcome back for another edition of Chicago Magazine Chefs on the Grill. Chefs on the Grill is a collaboration between Chicago Magazine and Hungry Magazine. You can find all of our podcasts at www.chicagomag.com or www.hungrymag.com. This month I sit down with Chef Richard Sandoval. Sandoval has recently been hired by bar impresario Randy Gerber to help reinvent his whiskey bar and grill at 1015 North Rush Street. The new spot, which is dubbed Mex at the Whiskey, is full of chocolate woods, blood red accents, and Mexican-flavored icons and art. The new design evokes both the roadside cantina and La Corrida, or the Mexican bullring. With 10 restaurants worldwide, including his flagship Maya in New York and Dubai, and Zango, an Asian-Latino fusion concept in Denver and Washington, D.C., Sandoval is prolific. His brand of modern Mexican cuisine fuses traditional ingredients like habanero chilies or wheat tlacoche with modern ingredients like citrusy yuzu or hearts of palm. He pulls no punches with his flavor profile, which is often full of bold, spicy chilies tempered by the zing of refreshing citrus. Enjoy the interview.
You're working here on revamping the menu at the Whiskey Bar and Grill on Rush Street. I'm curious about what your plans are and kind of what you want to bring to this endeavor.
You know, the partnership came out, you know, I knew Randy and Scott from New York, you know, they have their bars and I have, you know, my restaurants there, and, you know, I was always enjoyed what they did. I was a patron of their bars. I mean, they're cutting edge of, you know, the bar scene, and I used to frequent my restaurants, and you kind of like what we each other did. And so the opportunity came up for our first project together in Cancun. They were working on a project there at the Mi Hotel. And they asked me if I was interested, so we, you know, partner up there. And basically what it is, I mean, it's, you know, putting my food in their, kind of their environment. So if you see here, I mean, you know, the whiskey, you know, kind of kept their eclectic way, but, you know, they brought in some Mexican contemporary art to it. And pretty much what I'm doing with the food is I'm making a menu that fits that. You know, it has to fit into a bar. But at the same time, you know, we want to challenge people's palates, you know, with what I do with my, you know, modern Mexican cuisine. So it's a collaboration of their bar, my food, and, you know, putting an environment, you know, that fits it.
I mean, modern Mexican cuisine, I mean, one of the things that, you know, you think about probably 10, 15 years ago, nobody knew what that meant. You were certainly one of the innovators, Rick Bayless, bringing sort of regional Mexican to the forefront and then using great ingredients. I wondered about, you know, you've been successful in places like Denver and New York City, Dubai now.
Dubai.
I wondered about what you think about coming into this market. We've had a real sort of insurgence of this kind of cuisine. We've got Cuatro, Zocalo, Frontera Grill, Sal Biglon. Like, you know, not only that, but we have one of the best Mexican street markets in the country at the Maxwell Street Market.
Right.
You know, I wonder if you're intimidated by that, you know, or, you know, do you feel that there's something that you're bringing that's going to be completely different?
I'm coming into a great market. I mean, you have Rick Bayless, you know, probably the top chef for Mexican food in the world. So, you know, the palates here have already been exposed, you know, to that. You know, even though you say his food is regional, he's also modern. He's made it contemporary too. I mean, he's regional in what he, you know, what he does with his dishes, but his presentation and his textures and flavors, I mean, they're very contemporary too. So I think I'm just adding something more to that, you know, introducing people to my style. My style is, you know, sometimes I incorporate a little more, you know, colorful, a lot of contrast and flavor balances. But I don't think, I mean, I think it's, you know, it's similar to stuff that you guys have tried here. So, I mean, it's not a, I'm bringing something completely new.
So you feel because there's already kind of an established market that it actually makes it easier as opposed to being a bigger challenge.
Exactly. Yeah, I mean, you know, when I first opened Maya in New York, I mean, it was a big challenge because, you know, people, when you said Mexican, they were expecting something, you know, very inexpensive or something, you know, laced with melted cheese, sour cream.
Sure.
You know, 10 years
Free
ago.
Fried beans.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So, I mean, now, I mean, I think, you know, like I've always said, I mean, Mexican food's going through, like, through the growing curve like Italian and French have been through. You know, we're using the same proteins as French and Italian restaurants, but using wheat tlacoche, crema fresca, you know, a lot of different types of chilies, you know, dried chilies, fresh chilies, you know, chipotles. So it's something that people will already understand and know, And it's, you know, it's just one more chef, you know, that, that will be doing it here.
You alluded to when you went into New York, how it was a little bit tough. I know two of your first restaurant ventures, I think an Italian restaurant in Acapulco, is that right?
Right.
And then you had a French venture as well. I wondered for you, was that a function of, you know, not having confidence in the idea of this modern Mexican or just forming that idea still? Or was it a function of you wanted to explore other foods before you?
Well, the first thing, you know, when I graduated from culinary school and I went back to work with my father, had already an established restaurant, and then he bought another restaurant, which was already Italian, very famous. So pretty much I was thrown into that kind of, you know, it's not something that I really wanted to do, but, you know, it was there, and it was a challenge for me. And I love all cuisines of the world, so for me it was great. And in Mexico, you know, after graduating, I mean, going back to Mexico and kind of cooking Mexican, you know, didn't make sense. So I kind of kept his menu of an international menu, you know, incorporated, you know, some French was already in there, you know, kind of upgraded and updated it. And the Italian one, like I said, was already there, and, you know, we were just revamping it. As far as my first restaurant in New York, which was like a French American with Asian, to jump into the New York market, you know, I wanted to learn, you know, how, you know, coming from Mexico and going to New York, you know, the Mecca, from my perspective, is the Mecca of the food in the world. You know, I wanted to learn how it worked, the reviewers, you know, the restaurant scene. I mean, it was a big, big move for me, so I wanted to learn. So, you know, I started with a very small restaurant, which is only about 40 seats, and kind of, you know, learn from there. After a year and a half, you know, then I knew it was time to do what I really, you know, was going there to do, was, you know, to introduce people to the food that I grew up eating. I mean, I think, as we talked earlier, you saw Mexican food 10 years ago. I mean, you said Mexican, everybody, you know, first thing is inexpensive, heavy, and all the cheese, sour cream. And then I said, and I wanted to introduce people to my Mexico where I grew up. And also introduce them also to my culture. So it wasn't just the food, but it was to introduce people that, you know, when I did Maya, I used a lot of silver from silversmiths, a lot of contemporary art, which people really didn't think that existed either. I mean, I think you went to Mexican restaurants, it was the newspaper, you know, cut paper, the piñatas,
mariachi.
Because I wanted to change people's perception of, you know, Mexican culture.
Let's talk a little bit about Mexican culture. I was doing a little research, and it looks like you have a Chefs of Field episode coming out. You went to Mishawakin, maybe?
Michoacan, right.
With your son, looking for avocados. I wonder, you know, what's new, you know, from the regional Mexican cuisine that you're discovering, or the kind of things that you're really excited about right now?
Well, you know, I mean, I love working with chilies. I mean, I think, you know, chilies are, you know, used in so many different ways. You know, from roasting them, from stuffing them, from frying them. So, you know, I like to use the traditional ingredients that we have in our culture, but, you know, try and use them in new and different ways. You know, the huitlacoche, you know, make vinaigrettes, make soups, you know, make tamales. So I think there's not that many new ingredients out there, but there's a lot of ingredients that people don't use them in very many ways. You know, they think like a chili, you know, it's just supposed to, you know, give you fire. No, you know, you take an habanero, you roast it, you know, and it brings out a little nuttiness. I mean, it brings, you know, a different characteristic. You make a puree, if it add a little bit, you know, to a sauce. So it just changes the characteristics of the different dishes with, you know, the old, you know, ingredients that we have in our culture.
I read that you like to construct, or you think about ingredients on plane rides sometimes when you're in the air. You can smell a dish, you know, when you're thinking about it in your head. I wondered, as you were traveling to Chicago, if you had already started thinking about dishes for what you were going to do here in Whiskey, and if there were any that you'd be interested in sharing or talking about.
Well, you know, I mean, people always ask me how to come up with dishes, and I think, you know, I mean, chefs, I know, we're like artists. I mean, you know, I think when a painter, you know, gets a canvas, I mean, I don't think kind of takes him until, you know, starts copying. I mean, I think he just gets inspired. And I think for me is, you know, when I'm on a plane, I'm kind of focused and I'm thinking about food, and I come up, you know, with my ideas. So as soon as I get off a plane, I'll go into the kitchen, I come up with ideas, and I can pretty much taste it in my head.
Yeah.
And so I get to the kitchen and I start putting it together, and that's a lot of the dishes I come up with. You know, that's how they come up with.
What are you proud of on?
What am I what?
What are you proud of on it?
On the menu?
Yeah.
I think what's great about this menu is that, you know, I had to create a menu that fit the whiskey, you know, because it's also a bar.
Mm-hmm.
But what I'm proud of is, you know, it has a little mix. It's not a very large menu, but it has a mix of all, you know, some signature dishes of myself, you know, some more traditional that I created, you know, for very easier for people to eat. So it's a little mix of everything. I mean, there's, you know, some eclectic, some traditional, and some modern. So there's a little, you know, mix of everything that, you know, that I do.
You know, one of the things I was thinking about when I was thinking about you was that, I mean, you're your own person, certainly, but if you make parallels, I think of you as sort of like the Mexican Alain Ducasse. You know, you have like 10 places now. You're very successful. You're growing. The thing I wondered, or the thing I always thought I'd want to ask Alain Ducasse, or, you know, and so this is my chance to ask you as you know, because I think there's a parallel there, is this idea of you started out cooking. It was your craft, you know, and I know you still cook. But you're also, in some ways, you're an entrepreneur, too. You're a business guy. You're running a business. And do you want to, is there a tug to ever just say, all right, enough is enough. I want to stop here, and I want to get back to cooking. Or, you know, is the business side just as much a craft for you as well? Like, how do you think about that?
You know, I mean, I'm always challenged by that. I mean, I think, obviously, what I love to do is cook. Uh-huh. It's what got me to where I am today. Like you said, you know, when you start growing, you know, you start getting involved in the business decisions, and that starts, you know, dragging you out of the kitchen. I just recently hired somebody to come run my company, and because my goal is, you know, to really, you know, get back into the kitchen, you know, create dishes, you know, which is what I really love to do. You know, obviously I still create all the menus, but, you know, when you're focusing on a new opening and everything, you know, kind of take some of the energy and focus away from, you know, from the food, which is what I used to do 100% of the time. So my goal is to, you know, to get back into that. I mean, you know, get, you know, more than I am today. That's, you know, that's what I love to do. That's what got me where I am, and I want to get inundated with it again.
I wonder how you think about constructing menus for particular markets, and we could use the example of Chicago since we're here. But I guess I was looking at the Dubai menu, for example, and I noticed that I don't think there's any pork on the menu, which maybe I'm wrong, but that makes sense because it's a Muslim city, of course. And, you know, so you obviously probably make some concessions to regionality. What do you think about when you come into a market like Chicago, you know, when you construct a menu?
Well, you know, obviously being the Midwest, I mean, you know, we're trying to have, you know, more beef dishes, meat dishes, than we would, you know, fish. I mean, just in, you know, the Midwest is known for, you know, more of a beef city. So basically, you know, we took that into consideration. But again, I mean, when I open a restaurant, I kind of want to do a menu where I don't want to cater to what that market exactly is, but I kind of challenge the people to try, you know, what I do, and kind of, you know, get my staff and through our training is to redirect people and say, we'll try, you know, yeah, I mean, you have enchiladas on the menu, and that's very traditional, but yeah, you can get those anywhere. You know, why don't you try the tuna with the hibiscus and the boniato puree? So obviously, you know, we put the traditional things that people can recognize. But for me, it's best, you know, to put new things and to challenge people's palates and say, wow, you know, Richard Sandler, you know, he is different. You know, he has his, you know, creative dishes. And but you definitely, you know, when you go to a different market, I mean, you know, I usually go spend time there. And what I used to do before, you know, is, I mean, as you looked at, you know, to research on me, you know, I have like 5 or 6 different concepts, which makes a lot harder than if you just had, you know, one Maya or something and just, you know, did them in every city. You ended up with 6 different concepts, and what's, you know, it was because of my passion for doing what I do. Is I'd go to a certain place where they asked me to open a restaurant, and I would do research, and I said, well, you know, I don't think Maya fits. I think, you know, we have to do this and change it here, you know, and kind of the decor has to be different, the price point has to be different, even though the menus might be similar. So I would adjust to the market to kind of create something that I thought would fit into that area.
How did you choose to go to Denver? You were really like one of the first celebrity chef type folks to go into Denver.
Well, actually, you know, they chose me. They a developer there had a restaurant that he wanted to, you know, Larimer Square is a very well-known street in, you know, downtown Denver, and the owner of the whole block also had the restaurants, and he wanted to reposition his street, and one of the restaurants he wanted to change, so they approached me about coming and opening, you know, one of my modern Mexican restaurants, and, you know, we made a deal, and then I opened that, and then another developer after, you know, Tamayo had tremendous success, asked me if I would do something else right down the street, so it was people were approaching me too.
One of the spots you have in Denver now is La Sandia.
La Sandia, right.
The watermelon, I think, is
the watermelon.
And I think the idea there is that it's more accessible price point wise for people, but still really good quality cuisine. I read that there's maybe a thought to roll that out even more nationally. I don't know if that's true. If it is, I love the idea. I mean, one of the things I've been a big proponent on record as a writer about is this idea that great chefs find a way to make their cuisine more accessible to everybody else, because instead of having like a lot of fast food or whatever. So I like that idea. Maybe you talk a little bit about that.
Yeah. I mean, I think that's exactly it. I mean, I took Mayan and I kind of brought Mexican food, you know, to the high-end market. But, you know, for the lower, you know, not the lower, but like the mid-market, I think for Mexican food, there really isn't enough anything. You know, you had the El Toritos, but I think, you know, those are broken models that really haven't worked anymore. They're not expanding, they're not growing. So I thought there was a need, you know, to showcase my food, you know, to more people. And the way to do it is, you know, is with a concept more approachable, you know, lower price point that, you know, people could actually afford, you know, for shopping centers. So that's how I came up with La Sandia. And we are doing our second one at Tyson's Corner in Virginia. And, you know, we'll see what happens after that. But it's all based, you know, like you said, La Sandia, you know, which is the loteria in Mexico. You know, when I was growing up in Mexico, we used to play, it's kind of like bingo. But instead of having numbers, you have the different figures. Like you know, you have the La Sandia, El Borracho, you know, La Sirena. So they would call it out, and then you put a vino, and then once you got, you know, four same. So the whole concept was kind of based on this lottery game.
That's cool. I wondered, I mean, to achieve the lower prices, I guess it would be a different game than some of your higher-end stuff. Do you find that you have to make any kind of concessions in terms of, you know, that, you know, it's this idea of, you know, being a businessman and also being a chef. Like, how do you reconcile those two things?
It's hard. I mean, obviously, you know, the product you use, you know, it's not, you know, the top quality. You know, you can't use the grade A's or the number ones, you know, you have to concede a little bit in that. But still, I mean, I think your cooking techniques and you know, the quality of the product. So, I mean, there's still certain standards that I would not allow, you know, to do work for that. And I think also where you can actually meet your profit margin is in your labor. You know, obviously you don't have such a high-end chef anymore. So, you know, you can save some money there. But you do make some concessions.
I did read, I think there was a somebody, one of the Denver Weeklies, or they had written sort of a, it was like sort of a negative review against Sandia, and I think the whole crux of it was this idea that you're not in the kitchen, or, you know, you travel too much, which I think any chef who opens more than one place, I think, you know, you look at guys like, even locally, like Sean McLean, who's opened Spring Green Zebra and Customs, but he still stayed close to home. I mean, he's had those criticisms. Do you think that's unfair, or, you know, do you think there's something to those kind of things, you know? Because, you know, I wonder, are the reviewers just making that, oh, well, he's not in the kitchen, therefore it can't be good, or, you know, how, that's something you have to face nowadays, obviously.
Yeah, absolutely, and I mean, I think that's a decision you make as a chef. You know, I mean, you either choose to stay with one or two restaurants, you know, kind of like Rick Bezos has here, and you know, and that's a choice that he's made. I think, you know, he doesn't, you know, he loves what he does. You know, doesn't mean that I love it any less. You know, except, you know, I chose, you know, to do more. I mean, you know, there's different personalities, different people. I think the reviewers sometimes are unfair in that because I mean, the quality is. I mean, there's doesn't mean that I'm the only great chef out there. I mean, there's hundreds of great cooks, chefs, you know, that you hire and you train them, and they follow recipes, and you have your team that, you know, constantly tasting. That particular review that you're talking about, you know, I was very disappointed, because if you read the whole review was about me. You know, it really didn't go into the food. You know, so a lot of my customers wrote back and said, you know, if you want to write a review about Richard Sandoval's personal lifestyle or what he does, yeah, but then, you know, but doing in all fairness to the staff, you know, talk about the chef. I mean, were the temperatures right? Were the right cooking methods used? Were the ingredients good? Were the flavors good? Not one sentence in the whole review said, well, this was bad or this was good. You know, so.
Well, let's talk about that, because so you have, like you said, you have good people who work with you. You know, obviously, executive chefs, sous chefs. What do you look for in the people that you work with? You know, is there a certain characteristic? And two, I wonder how you translate your vision so that it's something that spreads well, you know, because obviously that's the challenge with many places.
Well, I mean, the first thing I look at is the passion. I mean, the passion that people have with working with food, you know, dealing with food, you know. I mean, with a person, I mean, you can have him cook a family meal, you can right away tell if the guy cares or doesn't care. I mean, if he makes shit to eat himself, then obviously, you know, when was he going to serve the guests? You know, he's not going to care. So I think you see right away, you know, how they care. I mean, you see their work ethic. And, you know, and another challenging thing that people don't understand is to surround yourself with great people. In order to keep these great people, you have to grow because these people want opportunities. If not, you know, people are going to, you know, all the people that open Mexican restaurants, you know, they come to my restaurants to look for people and to hire the chef because, you know, I'm successful and they want my style. So also, I mean, to keep these great people growing as persons, I mean, you have to challenge them, you know, I mean, trying to open other places. I mean, like my guys here, like John, you know, he's my executive chef. I mean, he loves, you know, these opportunities to come here to Chicago.
What's John's last name?
Calloway.
Okay.
You know, to come to a market like this, and you know, and he loves Chicago. You know, I've never been here before, and now he's been here for 2 weeks, and he loves it, you know.
Where did he work with you before?
He was the chef at Zengo.
Okay, so this is your new Asian Latino spot,
right? Exactly. Okay. Yeah, he was there, and then you know, he was at Tamayo for a while. And then, you know, promoted him to an executive chef of.
Did he basically start with you in your system, or was he somewhere else?
No, he was somewhere else. He was executive of a few restaurants in Denver.
What specifically about John did you like? Was there like a meal, like a family meal he cooked, or was there something?
Yeah, I mean, the first thing I do when I hire, when I'm looking for a chef, I have him cook me a meal. I mean, I can do a 5-course tasting menu for him. And, you know, I think pretty much there I can see how they work, you know, with a product, how their contrast, how their balances are. And he served me a great meal, and also, you know, had him, you know, come spend a week in the restaurant, and just his work ethic was he's very focused. He was a leader, you know, and that's another. I mean, being a chef, I mean, I think cooking very good food, I mean, a lot of people can do it, but managing and supervising and controlling costs, I mean, you know, that's a lot. I think you'll find a lot more people can cook good food. And less people that can actually manage and be leaders.
Yes.
You know, and to manage and run a successful company, you have to have that, you know.
I was curious about Zengo. That's an interesting, this idea of Asian and Latin flavors. I know there's been some of that. I think I read about Monica Patina in Mexico
Monica
City.
Monica Patina,
yeah. Doing like Chinese and Mexican fusion for a little bit. You don't think of those two necessarily together, or maybe you do. I'm curious where that idea came from, or...
You know, I've always, you know, I spent time in Asia, and I love Asian food. I mean, you know, Japanese, Thai, I mean, you know, but and I think if you look at both cuisines, I mean, I think that they're very similar. I mean, they're very easy to fuse together, put together because of the contrast. I mean, they're all playing with sweets, spices, acids. I mean, you know, so I mean, I think Mexican food is exactly the same way. I mean, you know, it's sweet, it's spicy, it's balanced, it's, you know, the moles, the chilies. You know, I mean, they're all, you know, up and down as far as, you know, the flavor profile. So, I mean, I think it was a great mix of, you know, using Mexican and Asian. I mean, I think they go phenomenally well together.
You know, a thread from interviewing a lot of chefs, it seems like they love Asian food. Like, that's
right.
their sort of comfort food always. I wonder why that is.
I think it's very, not, I wouldn't say challenging, but it's very appeasing to the palate. You know, you're playing with all the different, you know, it's sweet, it's spicy, and there's a lot of textures going on. So, I mean, it's not in your face. I mean, it's subtle, but still, but it's sweet, spicy, you know, I think that's, you know, that's what people like.
Mm-hmm. You know, the other thread that comes up about you every once in a while is this idea that you played tennis in college and professionally in Europe, I understand.
Right.
I wonder what those days were like, and do you miss that? Do you still play tennis?
You know, it's funny. You know, I started, obviously, you know, to do what I do, you have to be, you have a very obsessive personality, you know, and to be in this business more than anything, you have to be a little crazy, you know, something. And I started playing again, you know, about 2 years ago, and, you know, being the way my personality is, I mean, I went out after not playing for 5-10 years, and I went and played 20 matches in 3 days, and I tore my rotator cuff.
Oh, no.
But going back to tennis, I mean, you know, the thing that I loved about the kitchen was it was very similar to playing in a tennis match. You know, I mean, when you're on the line and the tickets are cranking and, you know, and you're in a zone, I mean, in the tennis we call it, you know, when you're in a zone, you know, just everything is the same thing. You know, when you're cooking the tickets, I mean, if everything is flowing, I mean, it's just, I mean, you don't even know what's going on. You're just, you know, you're turning, you're cooking, you're tasting, you're... And there's adrenaline rush, and it's very, very similar, and I love that. I mean, it's like it's like I'm at peace at that point, you know. When,
and it's very much like an athletic competition.
Exactly.
And, you know, it's like just, you know, when you're in the weeds and, you know, the fire is 100 degrees in the kitchen. Yeah, I mean, I see that.
I mean, there's a rush. I mean, it's like it's the same thing as you're playing at the Hens. You're in a semifinal, you know, there's pressure, you know, you're there, you're nervous, you're anxious. And so it was very similar for me.
I heard Thomas Keller has a sign in the French Laundry that says finesse, and it's like the dictionary definition of finesse. And I always thought of that as like the Notre Dame play like a champion, you know, they have the sign above the locker room. It's the, so there, you know, it's like another sports parallel in that sense.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I mean, the kitchen is, I mean, it's, you know, and the thing is, I mean, you know, you have a time lapse of 2-3 hours when everybody's coming in and everything is just, you know, just you're cranking, and it's, you know, and it's just like a good or a bad match when you win. I mean, you know, two or things go bad, you know, the waiter or someone screws something up and your night is done. I mean, you're catching up, you know, for the next 2 hours. So
you were, I mean, you grew up in the food business. You talked about your father had restaurants, and that didn't deter you. I would have thought at that time, you know, growing up, you would have known. And, you know, there's like this theory, or I talked to a lot of, like now there's sort of like this new wave of deli owners in Chicago where people are starting to bring back the Jewish deli. And I talked to some of them, and most of them are like, two generations removed from the old deli owners, and you ask them about it, and they always talk about how, well, their grandparents grew up in this business, they worked so hard, they didn't want their kids to go into it, so their kids all became lawyers and doctors, and then we lost delis, but, you know.
Now they're back. Yeah, well, you know, my father wasn't a chef, so, you know, I mean, I didn't actually see how tough it was, to be a chef and be in the kitchen, and never deterred from it, and it's growing up, and I always had a passion for food. You know, when I was in his restaurants, I was in the kitchen, you know, with my grandmother. You know, my parents were divorced, I spent a lot of time with my grandmother. I was always in the kitchen, you know, so I was always attracted to food. And so after, you know, finishing my tennis thing, that I wasn't making any money, I had to find a real career, you know. I looked and I said, what do you really love? And I said, well, you know, food, you know. So that's why after tennis I went to culinary school. So I always had a passion for food.
What did you learn about cooking from your grandmother?
You know, I think without me knowing, I mean, she was kind of forming my palate, you know, at that point. And then I think that's where I had an advantage of a lot of chefs, was that, you know, from a young age, you know, I was always tasting, you know, European butters and cheeses. And every Saturday it was either a Japanese or an Asian restaurant or a Spanish or an Italian. So I got exposed to so many different things, you know, at such a young age that, you know, my palate was trained, you know, for all types and colors, flavors of different things.
What did you learn from your father about the business?
I mean, that's what, you know, thanks to him, I think I'm successful, because, you know, I think, as you probably know, and, you know, many chefs, I mean, you know, to build a restaurant costs a lot of money. It's not like a publishing business or a computer business. You know, you rent a cubicle, you buy 2-3 computers, you bring one guy on, and you start working. As you're building your business, you know, you grow up, you know, here. I mean, to open a restaurant nowadays, you know, it's $3 million right off the bat.
You got to open with everything and hope.
Yeah, exactly. You know, and I think, you know, my father always taught me about budgets and, you know, always being within the budgets and, you know, the numbers and, you know, P&Ls, you know. So from the beginning, I always had P&Ls. You know, every month, you know, I pressure my account. I said, hey, by the 15th, I have to see a P&L. I have to see if I'm winning, losing. You know, I have to see what's going on. So I always learned to manage my business according to, what the business was doing. So I think thanks to him, I was able to become a businessman too.
Yeah.
I don't know if I like so much. Like I said, you know, I love food, and the business side is not...
What's your vision for the future? I mean, with so many places, you know, you could probably sit still, but like you said, you do have to grow because you have such great people, and you want to give them opportunities. What do you think about as your next move?
I don't know. I mean, I think my company's at a turning point right now where we're going to open four or five more places this year. So, you know, I don't know, I have 15, 16 restaurants, and... you know, I kind of have to make a decision, well, I want to continue doing that or just stay with what I have and just, you know. So, I guess, you know, I never had a plan. I still don't. It kind of just, you know, happened. And,
yeah.
I think that's the best way. I mean, when you really want something so bad and you try to get there, you know, it usually doesn't happen. And I really wasn't looking for it, and it happened. So now I'm just, you know, I think more than anything, I want to plan, you know, to successfully keep everything that I have manageable. Not only for me, but for the future of everybody that works for me, because, you know, I mean, I have, you know, 400 or 500 employees, I mean, that depend on me. So I want to make sure that as we grow, that it's a planned growth and that everything is, you know, right, you know, where it needs to be.
One of the things I think about, especially with your success, is this idea that, as we know, especially in New York, and certainly in Chicago to some extent, many of the backbones of the kitchen are Latino chefs or Latino line cooks, dishwashers all the way down. They're the backbone and heart of restaurants, I think. But, you know, they don't tend to ascend to the executive role all the time, necessarily. Maybe I'm making a generalization, but I think there's some truth to that. I wondered, you know, do you have any sense of why that is, or do you have a sense of, you know, I mean, I don't know. You know, it's a question that, and I don't mean it from like a racist perspective. I don't mean,
right.
I just mean I'm generally curious about this idea, you know, of how, you know, where you can get more chefs in that role, and you know, what's going on with that situation.
Well, I mean, I think, like you said, I mean, you know, I mean, they are the backbone. So I mean, you can go to any French, Italian, you know, Danielle, any of the top. I mean, there's Latins in their kitchens. You know, I mean, they are. I think being Latin, you know, to go up to the head position, I mean, it's hard for them because, you know, they're French restaurants and Italian, and, you know, so, you know, French chefs, Italian chefs like to keep, you know, their same culture, the same people, you know, on top. Like, most of my chefs are Latin. You know, so, I mean, you're not going to go into my kitchen and find a French chef, you know, running my line. And I think the reason being for is, you know, these Latin guys, unlike, you know, young culinary graduates and stuff, you know, that go from kitchen to kitchen, you know, they come in, they learn what you do, that you train their palate to your palate, and it just day after day that they reproduce it. And I think, I mean, then, you know, the main goal for any restaurant, you know, to stay successful is consistency, and that's what you want. And when you get all these young guys coming, you know, trying to learn, you know, they come in, you know, as soon as you walk out, you know, say, well, hey, well, I made this with this, you know, so let me add this and let me add that, you know, and everything starts, you know, going in a different direction. So, I mean, these guys, I think, they're hard workers, and they reproduce. You know, once you teach them one thing, they just do it over and over, you know, the same way.
One of your partners is Placido Domingo.
Right.
I wondered how you guys met and what that relationship's like. Does he sing for you?
I know he's a great partner. I mean, obviously, you know, I knew him from when I was in Acapulco. You know, he's Spanish, but spent a great deal of his life in Mexico. So when I was in Acapulco, you know, he has his vacation home there and spends a lot of, you know, not a lot, but the time that he does have free, he takes all his family with him, kids, grandchildren, and they all, you know, it's like their center for the family, you know, that's where they all get together. And we met there, and then when I opened in New York, he became a regular guest in my restaurant, and he had this restaurant, which is Pampano now, called Domingos, and he had closed it. I think he had some problems with his partners, and so he came to me and asked me if I was interested in, you know, doing something. And I had the idea of doing a seafood restaurant, so it all came, you know, timing. I say timing is everything at the right time, and, you know, put it together, and it's an incredible success now, the restaurant.
Is he a passionate gourmand?
Yeah, he loves food. I mean, he loves food, and, you know, he's great. When he's in the restaurant, he goes into the kitchen, talks to all the staff. I mean, when he's in New York, he's in the restaurant every night. But, you know, he lets me cook, and I let him sing.
I mean, I bet food, I mean, I think, as I know, and I'm sure you know more than anybody, food takes you everywhere, and you meet everybody, and you get it's such a wide-ranging thing, it's like a common thing amongst everybody, you gotta eat, right?
Well, I think, in my culture, I mean, food brings everything together, I mean, but I think in everything, I mean, everything in life, you know, pretty much revolves around culture. I mean, business deals are made around that, family reunions are made around food, you know, all our most important holidays are revolved around food, I've been blessed and fortunate. I mean, it's taken me all over the world, you know, met the greatest people. I mean,
Have you dined at any of your local competition? I wonder.
Not yet. Yeah. I mean, actually, I've been to Rick's restaurant a couple times, you know, because I'd never been there before because I hadn't spent much time in Chicago. So I did go to.
Do you guys have any kind of a relationship?
Yeah. I mean, we see each other, I mean, in different events, yeah.
How would you characterize your style relative to his? I mean, and not like necessarily I'm better or whatever, but like I'm curious about, because I haven't really gotten a chance to eat in any of your restaurants.
Right. I think I'm more modern, contemporary. I think he's more, like you said, more regional. He's more about
authenticity,
being true to what that recipe was, you know, from wherever town he discovered it, you know, and following it to, you know, how it's made according to that place, or, you know, so he's more authentic, I'm more modern, contemporary, more, I was be more creative and play around with ingredients, and I think he's more about, you know, more authentic.
Sure, you would throw, or you would mix Asian with, you know,
exactly.
Latino ingredients, or you
right.
might be a little more fusionist, whereas yeah. Rick kind of stays straight right. for the most part.
And for me, as a chef, I mean, it gets to a certain point, you know, I mean, it becomes, if you're more, I mean, if you're authentic, it's okay, because, you know, you're pretty much just, you know, reproducing recipe and making them perfect and, you know, balance and contrast. But as a chef, you know, it gets to a point where working with the same ingredients for so many years, I mean, you know, you kind of, to a certain extent, get bored. I mean, look at all the French chefs. I mean, you go to any French restaurant, you'll find avocado, you'll find cilantro, you'll find jalapenos, you know, a lot of ingredients in their cuisine. I mean, even I think French have done that. I mean, they've introduced a lot of other ingredients into their cuisine.
I wonder if you said you don't really have a plan, you have opportunities that come up. Do you have like a mad scientist idea, like something that maybe isn't Mexican, something that's in your heart that you want to do that maybe, you know, 10 years from now or maybe 5 years that you've been thinking about or that you just really want to do?
Not really. I mean, you know, I had a one concert, you know, it's going to be called Jap Arriba. It's going to be Japanese-Mexican. But no.
You could do it like Benihana, but it would be like chiles and exactly. He's like throwing shrimp in the hand.
Yeah. I mean, I think Benihana is a great concept, you know. I think it's a very
I mean, we all grew up, I think, you know, I as a kid I remember going, and you know, I still go occasionally, and you know what, it's good food. I'm not a food snob, you know. I enjoy the show, you know. Sometimes right. I believe sometimes dinner is theater as much as it is about the food, and that's okay.
Right. No. I think Benihana is very straightforward. I mean, not just Benihana, but any teppanyaki. I mean, it's very, very straightforward. And I think, in retrospect, I mean, I think right now, I mean, food has gone way too. I think now it'll start to retract a little bit. I think, you know, with El Bulli and, you know, these people doing foams and this and that. You know, I mean, I think it went way too out there. You know, like you said, I mean, you know, when you go to Benihana, I mean, you know exactly what you're going to get. It's great, good product. You know, a shrimp. You just basic with a nice dipping sauce, and that's it. You know, it's flavor. And I mean, from my perspective, I mean, I think stuff is, you know, it's going to start, you know, to come back a little bit, I think.
So you don't have any plans to put lasers on your chilies?
Absolutely not. You know, I've never been a big fan of that.
What about Chicago? I mean, is this a first step? Do you know if this works out? Do you want to do more here?
Absolutely. I think it's a great restaurant town. I mean, you know, the little time that I spent here, I mean, the people are great. I mean, you see all the restaurants are busy. You know, obviously they love Mexican food. I mean, you know, they love what Rick Bayless does. I would definitely love to do, you know, one of my signature restaurants here.
What did you think about Chicago before you came here, or did you have a sense of what you thought of the community and then how you think about it now?
No, actually, from the beginning, I mean, you know, when Randy and Scott mentioned the opportunity, I said, you know, I mean, that's a market I would love to be in. I mean, it's something, you know, I've heard great things, and I've met a lot of chefs from here, and you know, it's definitely a city that I wanted to go to. I mean, it's, you know, everywhere else, and I think it's, you know, the last big city where, you know, people still love food, they love to go out, and there's an opportunity to do things.
What about your children? Are they the next generation of modern Mexican?
I hate to say this, but yes.
Yeah.
My son. My daughter wants nothing to do with food. Yeah. You know, but my son, yeah. I mean,
how old is your son?
My son is 10.
Okay.
My daughter is 7. And, I mean, you know, obviously I go to him and I take him to good restaurants. And, you know, I mean, my daughter will open, you know, order a dozen oysters. And my son will have crab legs and caviar. You know, I mean, he loves tasting, you know, cause, you know, from a young age, when I saw that he loved food, you know, I told him, I said, you know, if you want to be a chef one day, I mean, you should try everything. So anywhere he goes, you know, he tries. I mean, if he doesn't like, you know, he'll put an aberrant and take it out. But I said, just taste. So now he tastes everything. I mean, he's only 10, but you know, for that show you were talking about PBS,
yeah,
you know, they asked him. I don't know if you saw this.
I haven't seen it.
They asked him, you know, well, what do you want to do? He goes, well, I'm going to run my dad's restaurants one day.
You're like, hopefully it'll still be there.
Exactly.
It's a fickle business.
Exactly. I mean, you said it. I think that's a tough thing about this business is you have to be on top of it every single day because you don't know what tomorrow's going to happen. I mean, you know, one slide and consistency is anything, and you know, you're done.
Yeah, it is tough.
You know,
and people
tough.
Are ruthless. How's Mexican food being received in Dubai?
Phenomenal. We just last month we won the I can't remember the name of the award. I'll get you the name, but it's the biggest award in the Middle East and Africa for the best hotels or best restaurants. And Maya won best fine dining restaurant. So They're not best Mexican, but it was, you know, the best fine dining restaurant. So people have really accepted well. I don't know if you feel the same way, but I think, I mean, Mexican food has so many flavors, ingredients, you know, done the right way.
Sure.
It can be a fine dining experience. And unfortunately, for many years, it was looked at as very inexpensive. But when you put all the flavors and ingredients together, I mean, it's a great cuisine.
I'm totally respectful of the Muslim culture, but I have to lament that they don't get to have any tacos al pastor or some good carnitas. Just, they're missing out.
Yeah, but, I mean, al pastor, yeah, those are two of the best things. I agree with you.
I appreciate you doing this.
No, thank you.
Thanks a lot.
It's my pleasure.
Thanks for listening to Chefs on the Grill. I hope you enjoyed the interview. If you have any feedback, please drop me a line at mjnagran@hungrymag.com. We'll see you next month, and in the meantime, stay hungry.